Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Sharon Dale. I'm here with my co-host, Jonathan Sinclair. And we've got such a jam-packed show today, Jono. I don't know how we're going to fit everything in, but
it's going to be a busy one. It's going to be time constraints, but we really want to get through everyone.
Yes, so we're strictly on a 20-minute budget here.
Yeah, we have to become very strict with our time now and discipline ourselves, because sometimes we just want to carry on talking.
I know, there's so much to say. So I think we've got to get into it today. We're first going to speak to Ainsley Hayes from NSPCA as a follow-up to that Jagamara Predator Park story with that man phoned in last week, which was quite emotional.
Let's just do a recap. Last week, Justin Fernandez was supposed to be on a show. He's from the Jagamoro Predator Park. And he wanted to speak to us about what was going on with his court case and what was happening with people trying to take his tigers. But landed up on his way here, he had to return back because the people came to claim his tigers.
Right.
And there was a lot of drama.
Some were darted and one was shot. And we're going to
get to the bottom of the truth.
Yeah, he was in tears. He could barely speak and he was stuck on the road. So Ainsley Hayes is here from the NSPCA. Welcome, Ainsley. Thanks for coming in today, because we really want to know more about this.
Thanks for having me back on the show.
I know, it's only a pleasure. So, Angie, what we got when the man phoned in was that this is some kind of legal dispute with the land, that they've gone under, apparently. Someone's claiming the land back and went in there and darted, and I'm not sure, shot. Can you tell us more?
Unfortunately, this has been an ongoing matter that we have been aware of sort of from the outside. There have been huge legal battles going on, and unfortunately what has happened is, as you say, there have been financial difficulties, and what we've established is that unfortunately the company that owns the animals and the reserve and the park and that has been liquidated. This has been a very long legal battle, and there's a huge fight from both sides. Unfortunately, not a lot of sort of solid facts have been provided, especially in the media, and there's been a lot of emotions, and understandably, because these are live animals after all.
Sure.
But unfortunately, there's been a lot of hysteria and unfortunately, intended hysteria being drummed up. No animals were shot. As you say, people...
Oh, really? So yes. None of them were shot?
No.
Okay.
People did arrive to dart the animals and remove the animals to take them to a new owner. And the legality of this removal is now being debated, and that will go through the courts, and that's for the owners and the new owners to fight it out legally. Initially, there were reports that the tigers had been shot and one was dead and all of this, but no, the animals were darted by a veterinarian, and from what we've established, if there are queries as to the veterinarian's credibilities or professionalism, that must be reported to the African Veterinary Council. But the animals were darted, they were placed into transport containers, and then the trucks were actually stopped from leaving the premises.
Okay.
So this is where we now have cruelty problems, because those animals were confined to very small suitable transport containers, but they were not allowed to leave the property, and that actually carried on until the next day. So those animals were confined unnecessarily. So we've asked the witnesses to actually liaise with the SAPS and to look into whether they can lay charges or not, because it's been very difficult to get to the bottom, and I think in the weeks coming there is going to be a lot more other information that does surface. So, but for now, the animals are back on the farm.
Oh, so they're back there?
Back in their cages, and they are being cared for by the Fernandes.
Okay, by the people that... But now, as you said, there was a lot on social media, hysteria, mass hysteria.
A lot of news organizations jumped on.
A lot of news organizations. I think we were the first people to kind of breaking news.
Yeah.
And we were kind of looking at each other going, what do you do? What do you do?
Yeah.
But there was a lot of people saying that this group that came and darted them were involved in canned hunting, which immediately put my heckles up. Was that something that is true? Or
there's no fact.
No facts
proving
about
that. Unfortunately, when it comes to any involvement with captive predators in this country, that's the first conclusion people jump to, and understandably.
Sure. Understandably.
But that's also to be said, if people are buying baby lions and baby tigers from places, they're also supporting the industry. So there's more than one side to the story. But from what we've received is there's no fact. We've spoken to the government officials involved, and the information that we've received, it looked like there is certain paperwork that was in place, but this is not the legality of that is not within our mandate to investigate.
But Andy, that's so sad, because what are the laws? These are animals. They're seen as commodities,
assets.
They're seen as assets.
Yeah.
These are lives. And how does the law stand on something like that? If something or a game park is in liquidation, what happens to the animals?
It's a huge problem. And I think one of the biggest problems is that our government doesn't take this into consideration when they give permits to people to keep wild animals or to run game farms. And especially in this financial climate, we're seeing it time and time again, and it's increasing. People have these great ideas and these great visions of starting this predator park or starting this game reserve, and then they don't realize the finances involved. They get, come into financial difficulties, and then they go under. And then the property or the business is liquidated, and unfortunately, in terms of the law, they are assets, albeit a boat, a chair, a house, a lion, an elephant, they are attached. So it's very important if you're an individual or an organization that is going through financial difficulties and you have live animals that are that you are responsible for, and you know that this is going to, there's a chance something may happen, please speak to the authorities, please speak to ourselves or the local SPCA and just say, I'm worried this could happen, what can I do? Because with all the liquidators we've dealt with, when we've explained to them that if the property is liquidated and the animals are attached to, and you're in charge of them, in terms of the law, we will prosecute you. For the cruelty. So, the definition of owner extends to the liquidator, the new owner, even if the new owner may not be on the property. If you now legally own the animals, you're responsible for them.
So even if it's a bank, the bank becomes responsible.
Exactly. But when we explain to it, then we've had very good cooperation in terms of that. So if you know something funny may happen or you're worried, please speak. Don't leave it to the last minute.
No, sure. No, sure, because these are lives. I mean, and that is a worry, as you say. You hear of so many of these parks going under. And where do these animals go? So if they speak to NSPCA, do you have a place for them to go, Ainsley?
No. We can offer advice, and that's it. We don't have sanctuaries ourselves. We aren't involved. All of the bona fide sanctuaries in this country are full. You know, predator sanctuaries, because there's so many animals that need rescuing. And these are also, you know, true rescues. When you've got lions that have been stuck in a circus cage all of their life, or they've been bred to, you know, to their last, you know, their last ounce of their health, these animals also need rescuing, not just, you know, someone had a pet animal and now they ran out of money and now that animal needs rescuing as well. You know, people need to take responsibility. If you take on any animal, you need to make sure you have the knowledge, the finances, the experience and the facilities to care for that animal for the rest of its life.
For the rest of its life, absolutely. It's a commitment you have to make.
You know, the Jagamoro Park, I think they had the best intentions when they got the cats, and although, you know, you can debate should we keep wild animals as pets and stuff, I think at the end of the day they do love those cats and they do feel a real big attachment and he was so devastated when they came to take his cats because mainly he didn't know where they were taking them and you know, I see it from his point of view, but then at the side of it, on the other side, we can't just put the law aside and say,
I really felt for him. You could see even the videos that he posted,
it was so real and so raw.
How it must have felt to see your babies that you're caring for. But, I mean, this is the sad part, Ainsley, is that the breeding, again, you know, these we talk about dog and cat backyard breeding and all the rest, but the lion, tiger breeding, a lot of them go into canned lion hunting.
That's the sad reality. And even, you know, well-meaning people who now want these animals, if you buy them, you're also supporting the industry, you know. It's the same as saying, oh, well, the problem is that the word rescue and saved is thrown around quite loosely. And yes, you may be rescuing that individual from a bad situation, but you are condemning how many more in its place. It's like saying, I want to close a pet shop down by going and buying all the animals. Well, guess what, sweetheart? Next day, they're going to have even more because you're just creating business.
That's true. That's very, very true. That applies to all animals, is you've got to stop it somewhere before. But on this property, I believe there were Bengal tigers, lions, timber wolves, a whole lot of animals there. So what is happening now? Is this going to go into a court case? Yes. In the meantime, is there some kind of permission for him to keep it there until the court decides?
Yeah, we don't know the exacts of the legal instructions, but this matter is still sub judice, so there is going to be further legal actions, and from, you know, I don't know from which side. You know, it's been very difficult to get to the bottom of exactly what's going on, because this has been a very long, drawn-out matter. But this, there's been no final conclusion on the matter. But for now, the animals are safe. They're back on the farm in the care of their owners, and the matter is still going through the courts, from what I understand. So we'll just have to wait and see what the outcome is.
And I'd imagine that would have to happen pretty quickly, because the new owners would obviously want to move on to the property.
You'd definitely be able to go for urgency on these cases.
There must be something said, though, for the public outpouring with this story. Yes. There's been so much reaction to it, and a lot of people are reacting emotively, which is understandable. They see these big cats, and you see the photos and stuff. But I don't know. You can't really get involved. What can we do? We can only talk about it and just hope that the solution is for the best interests of the tigers and the lions and whatever animals.
And I think it's important that people try and get all of the facts.
Yes.
Before, you know, it's very difficult now because now it is sort of limbo for the owners, for the animals, for all the public supporting them, for everyone who's been involved
in
this case.
It's in the court's hands.
Exactly. And there's not a whole lot that can be done apart from following the proper legal processes. At least the animals are stable for now, and that's the most important thing. And you know, there's a lot of attention now, so any further movements or actions with the animals will be closely monitored, and people are aware of this now.
And you're quite right, Jana. I mean, the emotion on Facebook, the social media platform just went crazy. I mean, there were people from all over the world saying, how can we help? What can we do? I think there was a donation sort of account set up, you know, that sort of thing. But do you get a lot of this? A lot of these parks closing?
It's increasing. It is definitely increasing. Some people do make plans prior, which is what we encourage. You know, if you know that your animals are going to be attached, you can. There's wiggle room, especially when it comes to live animals. You can appeal to people's better natures or make certain agreements. Say, you know, if you're going to attach the animals, the condition is that they have to go here or they have to be treated this sort of way. But unfortunately, we are seeing it increase all the time. And I think also one of the biggest problems is that people are given permits without having to prove that they actually know what they're doing, that they have the funding and all of that. You know, when we do our inspections, it's one of the first things you ask. Okay, so you've started a sanctuary. Let us see your finances. Let us see a trust.
Can you afford it?
Do you have a trust set up? If you pass away, who's going to look after those animals?
Right.
But the government officials that issue these permits don't even investigate that. It's like, okay, you want a permit, pay X amount, and here's your permit. And there's no follow-up. And also then, when things like this happen, it's not the government who steps in to help. They just sit back and go, oh, okay.
They've got enough on their plate to deal with humans. I think it's left up to you guys to...
But, Auntie, can you not... Are you working with government to try and change laws to get the permits? I believe that permits should be issued to keep any animal. whether it's a dog or a cat or an exotic animal, you should have a permit.
A huge part of our daily work is engaging with government to take forward, because, you know, we see this on the ground. We're the ones who do the inspections. We get the calls.
You're there picking up the pieces.
Yeah. Exactly. So we do try and get these points across and try and influence legislation changes. Unfortunately, too limited success so far.
Because these lion petting, let's call them petting parks, they obviously have to have a continual source of baby lions to be petted by the public who are paying to do that. What happens to them then?
Exactly.
Once they've grown up.
Ainsley, you mentioned something earlier that these predators that are born in captivity, their final destination usually is canned hunting.
It's either breeding or hunting. You know, it's very rare. That's the main industry. And the thing is, it's such an easy industry to launder animals through because you've got so many different role players. You've got the hunting farms, you've got the breeding farms, you've got the petting farms, you've got the circuses, you've got the private pet owners. So these animals are all just in this sort of whirlpool of going all around. But there is absolutely no reason apart from profit to breed predators in captivity in South Africa. These animals do not and will not go back to the wild.
Unless it's for conservation reasons or as you say.
But with predators, it's been proven time and time again. It's better to repopulate wild areas with wild predators because they imprint. Captive predators lose their fear of humans and you can't release these animals into the wild.
That's what I was going to say. If you get an animal that's been used in a circus... Where does that animal go? That lion can't be thrown into the wild.
No, exactly.
That's not going to survive.
Exactly.
So it's got to have a place
to go. It's either going to land up in a cage somewhere.
Or shot in hunting.
Yeah. It's a very sad thing.
Or exported
to
zoo.
In terms of legislation and stuff, should animals be seen as assets, like Sharon was saying earlier? You wouldn't, if someone has defaulted on their payments, come and take their children away.
Yeah.
But you can come and take their animals away, which...
It's a huge problem.
Leave something to be said about the rights of animals and how we view them.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, we have huge problems with municipal zoos in this country because the municipality sees those animals as assets. So if you want to move an animal, you want to sell an animal, you have to go through the same paperwork as to sell a chair. So these animals end up sitting in cages for months and months just because of paperwork.
Yes. Ainsley, no, it's just now just to close off, how can the public help? People are listening now saying, what can we do? How can we help? I think it also comes down to supporting the NSPCA, who needs the funds to do the work that they can do. So is that step one?
Donate. Without a doubt. You know, funds are very difficult. We have to cover the entire country. We're the only organization that tackles wild animal welfare, and especially we do the inspections at these facilities. We ensure that appropriate standards. Funding is the biggest thing. If you don't have the money, then volunteer. Go to bona fide sanctuaries, bona fide wildlife rehabilitation centers, or SPCAs. Go and volunteer your time.
Absolutely.
Even make blankets for the animals. You know, there's so much that if each individual person did what they could, it would be a lot easier for all of us.
Make a huge difference. A huge difference. And see, how would they donate? Go onto your website.
Our website has all
of
the www.nspca.co.za.
Perfect. Guys, please, let's get involved. Let's help and let's see what we can do for these animals. Ainsley, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
I'm sure we're going to get you back in again to follow up on the story. And we'll be right back with Smaragda Lowe from Ban Animal Trading.
I have a very dramatic announcement. So anyone with a weak heart should leave now.
Unreal. Revolution. Uncensored. Revolution. Unfiltered. Revolution. Unchanged. Revolution. Unadulterated. Revolution. Unbelievable. CliffCentral.com.
We're back. This time we've got Smaragda Lowe in studio with us from Ban Animal Trading. Welcome, Smaragda. Thanks for coming back. I know we had you in many months ago.
Yes.
But today we actually want to talk about Ban Animal Trading, what you guys are doing, and also look at this whole live export story.
Yes.
That is very... I'm just trying to think. Our headphones aren't working, John.
Okay. I'm going to get Duncan on that.
Okay, perfect.
But yeah,
I just thought I was going deaf or something was very wrong with me. That's fine. Smaragda, let's start with, tell us first, what is Ban Animal Trading? Right. What do you do?
Okay. Thank you so much for having us again, Sharon. We really appreciate it to get the word out for the animals and the message out that animals are not ours to exploit in any way.
Right.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Ban Animal Trading is an animal rights organization. And we started about 2 years ago or so, just to spread the word for all animals out there. So basically, we concentrate on wild animals. We concentrate on pet shops. That's basically how we started. We address the fur issue in a, you know, a little bit, because there's Fur Free South Africa who actually, do all of this. Then we also look at farm animals, and especially the live export trade, which is one of the most vile and cruel trade in the world. And this is the one that's happening now, and it's actually, it seems to be picking up, and this is why we really appreciate this, so we can get the word out. Most people in South Africa don't know that South Africa is part of the export, live animal export trade.
What are we exporting, Smaragda?
We're exporting, well, they call them cattle. We prefer to call them sentient beings.
Right.
But they export cattle, goats, you know, animals that people, say, for example, in Mauritius, and I'll tell you about a rumor that is going around as well now, but the people in Mauritius would use to eat.
Right.
So that is what we are exporting. So it's mostly cattle and goats.
Okay. Yeah. And then they're going where? To countries like Mauritius, you say?
Yes. Basically, what's happening is the animals that are being exported at the moment go to Mauritius. And it's about a journey of 4, 5, 6 days for them on the ship. Then we've heard a rumor, and we need to make sure that this does not happen in any way. And that is that the South African government, together with other companies, are planning to export more than 1 million animals, cattle or whatever, to Indonesia. Now, that is not a journey.
That's a long boat trip.
That's a long boat trip. That's going to take them about 3-4 weeks, depending on the size of the ship and, you know, how fast it goes and
yes,
so
yes.
on. So that is something that we need to stop immediately, because if we don't stop this, we will become like Australia, where our economy depends on the export of animals, and we cannot let that happen.
Right. And I mean, the way that they are exported, it's not very humane, is it, Snafta?
It's not humane at all. You know, most of the animals who come to the harbour, they don't come from the farmers in the area only, because it's a huge number of animals. So you'll have 2,000, 2,500 animals, 1,500 animals that are loaded onto the ships. They don't come from the farmers in the area. So they are kind of, for want of a better word, imported from other areas. They are travel by road on the cattle trucks.
Yes.
For
so
3-4 days.
Oh, is not comfortable.
Yeah, for 3-4 days where they cannot lie down. They cannot sit. They have to stand for 3-4 days. Then they get to the harbour, and on the harbour they are loaded onto the ship immediately. And then they have to go through seasick, you know, the motion sickness and whatever.
Sure. And what are they in? Cages?
It's kind of a, it's not really
like a cage.
It's like, no, it's not even a crate. It's kind of an open area. And sometimes they'll have hay or whatever for them there. And it's just a section that's kind of partitioned off, you know, with steel bars
and
whatever.
And they're all together?
Most of them are together. So some of the time, or most of the time, those animals can't lie down all together.
Right.
You know, there's
right.
not enough space for them to lie all down together. But by the time they're loaded onto those ships, those animals are exhausted already.
And very stressed.
Yes, and they call them downers. So those are the animals that cannot actually get up. They're so stressed, they're so tired from the trip that they've made by road already. And, yeah, they will then probably inject them, prod them or whatever, and to make them walk onto the ship. Now, if you saw three weeks ago, the NSPCA inspectors were on the ship that's actually in the harbour, coming to the harbour this afternoon. And they had to euthanize one of the animals because she broke her leg.
Oh, my word.
So, you know, this is the kind of thing that we're looking at. Why is this necessary?
Yeah.
Mm. Why?
And, I mean, how long was that leg broken before they realized?
Yes, exactly.
They found it. And
exactly.
The pain and the suffering. It just, it almost brings me to tears,
yes.
Marachta.
Yes.
What human beings subject animals to. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Since when? How are we raised, you know, to think that we have dominion over animals to me means that dominion means to care for them and treasure them.
It's a responsibility.
Not torture them. Not
Absolutely.
Use them and torture them.
You see, the problem is, and I think this is something that Ainsley addressed in the interview with you previously, that she said animals are commodities. They're products.
Mm.
So it's a thing, you
it's
know.
It's seen as an object.
Yeah, it's like the same as you sell a caravan or you sell a car or whatever.
Sure.
So we'll just sell, you know, these cattle.
Mm.
Forgetting, of course, that number one, they are sentient beings. Mm-hmm. Sentient being meaning that you can feel fear and pain.
Yes.
But that doesn't even come, you know, we don't even think about that kind of thing.
No.
This is meat. This is the way we can make money. So let's go for it. And then we put money over the welfare of animals. We really don't care about the welfare of animals. For example, if you look at the live export specifically, the farmer is paid for the number or the weight of the animals that go onto the ship. So before the ship leaves, he has been paid already.
So then he doesn't care what happens after that.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We've also heard that they will load more animals than what they say on the on the forms or whatever that go with them, so that if animals die on the journey,
it's not
which
a problem.
No, they just chuck them overboard anyway, and then they get that side, and then there will be the same number of animals that are offloaded that side as were loaded this side. So we don't really know, we don't have percentages of how many animals die on these absolutely terrible journeys, because we can't rely on reports coming from the ship's captain and the export company and the import company.
And Sparachta, it's perfectly legal, isn't it?
Oh,
in terms
absolutely.
Of government, they can do it.
Do you know, for us it's a really big battle, because the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, that department is responsible for regulations for the welfare of animals. That is what they are supposed to be doing. And there are no regulations governing the export of animals by sea. None. So basically, these guys can do whatever they want.
Right.
You know, in other words, once they're off our land,
it's okay.
Free fall.
Yeah, it's an absolute free fall. We've
kind of taken them on in a way, saying, but you know that in the country where these animals are going to, in that country, they're treated absolutely terribly. There are no welfare laws in those countries. People treat them differently. So we know that by loading those animals onto a ship, we are sending them to an absolutely cruel
fate. To hell. Yeah, we're sending them to
hell. What they'll say is, yeah, but those are not our animals. Those may be, that happens to animals that come from Australia, but that does not happen to our animals. When, what proof do we have that anything else happens, anything different to that happens to the animals that come from South Africa? And in the end, what does it matter? These are animals, these are sentient beings. Doesn't matter where they come from. This is where they're going to.
I can just imagine that trip, that journey, coming from it's the truck for 4 days, forced to walk onto the ship, then being locked up again. I would imagine no food, no water, I don't know.
And I think because animals have no voice, people don't think that they feel pain, emotions, sadness, depression. And they do.
They do.
And it's time people actually realize that.
Yeah.
It really is time. So, Smaragda, what is Ban Animal Trading trying to do? Educate the public? Mm. Are you going to get involved with government and try and make, try and get them to change their ways?
Yes, absolutely. The problem for us is that we can't really rely on the courts. You know, courts are not there to change legislation in any way. Or make legislation, so we can't rely on the courts. And our campaign really is to get the public aware of what is happening, and that this is not just some terrible industry that happens in countries far away. It's happening right under our noses. Mm. So we want the country, the people in this country, to be aware of what is happening. We want a groundswell, because once everybody knows what's going on and there's huge opposition to this, then the government has to listen. They have to sit up and they have to make the regulations. So this is basically the start of our campaign. We've asked people to write to Dr. Sangabi, who's I don't remember exactly his title, but he's one of the big bosses at the department at DAF, to say to him that we want this banned. There's no point in putting in regulations, because that's going to take another how many years. It needs to be banned until you can get your story together.
Yes.
So this is the beginning, and we're asking people to please join our page to see for updates what's happening. We're having a protest tomorrow in East London to highlight, you know, what is going on.
Are these where the ships are setting sail from, East London?
Yes, they come. Okay. They go only from East London at the moment. We don't know that they're going to change harbours or whatever, but they have the facilities at East London Harbour. They have the facilities at the moment. And so the animals are loaded there, and then they are taken to Mauritius, and we have to make sure that the one that happens to Indonesia does not actually happen at all. Mm. There was a newspaper article yesterday that came out saying that Indonesia had reduced their exports, or their imports, sorry, from Australia with 80%. Mm. So why now?
Because
does
it's
that
coming
mean,
from us
is
now.
It going to come from us? I mean, this is speculation. We don't really know.
Yes.
But I just have this funny feeling that maybe they have a better deal with us.
A better deal,
and
make
so
more
they
money.
And so they can make more money.
Yes.
Also for Mauritius, if you look at the population, the Muslim population in Mauritius is very small. It's something like 17%. We export thousands of animals every year to Mauritius. If you look at the abattoirs, numbers, because they do give out numbers. If you look at the numbers that were released last year, the abattoir in Mauritius, and there's only one state abattoir, slaughtered something like, they call them heads of cattle, slaughtered something like 130 heads of cattle that came from South Africa. Where did the
130?
Where did the other thousands go? Where were they slaughtered?
Yes.
These...
That doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't make sense.
No.
Something is off here. We can't rely on getting exact information. So it means we'll have to start doing our own investigations to find out what's going on. Until such time as these people will give us what we need.
We've actually got somebody, Andy Smith, who's just sent in a message on WeChat saying, is there no way for somebody to go and see... on these ships, or to monitor these animals on the journey, even to reinforce the areas where animals are kept on the ship? Well, that is what you're trying to do, isn't it?
The NSPCA has got their inspectors. All the NSPCA, well, not all of them, but inspectors from the NSPCA monitor the loading of the animals onto the ship. They are not allowed to get onto the ship. They need to get a warrant from the magistrate to actually go onto the ship. So, first of all, you have to ask yourself why.
What are they hiding on that ship?
What are they hiding on the ship? The last time, the export before this one, the ammonia levels on the lower decks were way above dangerous, but they couldn't stop the ship. They couldn't stop the ship from leaving. So we have to ask, why won't they allow a vet? Why won't they allow inspectors from a welfare organization to go with these animals on a trip? Because obviously they're hiding.
There's something going on. And I guess once they've left our harbor, that's it. We have no further say in it.
Yes. Also, I just want to mention that in Australia, the politicians are obviously also they're opposed to, you know, live exports, because this is where we look at, because they're the biggest country that they're doing such a lot of exports, so we take our cues from them. But they've also asked, the politicians have asked to travel on these ships, and they've been denied. They won't, nobody will ever let them on. They won't let the vets on, they won't let the inspectors on. Why not?
No, there's something going on. And you know, Smrucht, I was thinking the other day, I'm vegetarian. I can't dictate to other people what to do. People will always eat meat. But I think, please ensure that the meat that you're eating, if you have to do it, for whatever reason, comes from a protected source, free range, where these animals have good lives. I don't know if that's possible, Smrucht. Can you eat meat and not be, participating in animal cruelty?
Yes.
That is the big question.
It's very difficult. It's not a difficult question to answer, but I think the answer comes across as being judgmental, which is not really.
Yes, that's why it's difficult for me to formulate that question, because. Yes. You know, you can say to people, don't eat meat, but they will always do it.
You know, obviously, being an animal rights activist, I don't believe in ban animal trading. Does not believe we have a vegan philosophy, so we don't believe that animals are ours to eat or wear or exploit in any way. And yes, we have the idea that free range animals live happy lives, but what does that free range mean? Does it mean that they have maybe 20 centimeters more to move?
Mm.
Does it mean that they are slaughtered
and
in a different,
still going to die? Yes,
in a different abattoir. But when it comes to live exports specifically, if we look at what's happening in South Africa, there are certain individuals only who are benefiting from this. This is not making our economy grow in any way. Our argument has always been, although we are opposed to the slaughter of animals, that let's kill the animals here in South Africa, where our NSPCA can actually go and check what is going on in the abattoirs.
And then export the meat.
And then export the meat. That means also that we'll be creating jobs for people in South Africa at these abattoirs, but they won't listen. They won't listen because it hurts their pocket.
Why wouldn't they want to do that? Because then they would have to keep the meat frozen, which I suppose is more expensive than transporting a live animal. Is that the reason?
I think that's the reason, because with cold chain, you know, everything that goes with a cold chain, it's probably really expensive. Mm. And you also need to remember that exporting to another country, Mauritius or Indonesia or whatever, human rights are not what they should be there either.
So those people, animal rights.
So those people are paid very little. And we've heard these stories, and I don't know whether it's true, but we've heard these stories that, for example, animals go from America, so chickens, take chickens. Chickens go from America to China, where they slaughtered and then they take and exported, the meat is taken back to America, because the labor is so much cheaper in China. You know, so that's the kind
of
thing.
It's all about money.
It's all about money, and let's not care about the animals because, you know, really, this is just a piece of meat on my plate. Who cares?
Who cares? Smrucht, now, what can the public do? How can they get involved? How can they help? Can they, you know, come to one of your demonstrations? I mean, what can we do?
First of all, we'd like them to join our social media Facebook page, which is called Ban Animal Trading South Africa. And on there, they will see the post, and we've asked them, number one, to obviously create awareness and share everything that they can. That's the first one. The second one, we've asked them to write, and we've given the email addresses of the government officials who they need to write to, demanding that this be banned. If there's a demonstration, there is one tomorrow in East London, so anybody around there, please join us so that we can get the word out. And as we go along and as our campaign develops, we will obviously let people know. Also, we have a huge billboard that's gone up, and it's the first billboard ever against animal exports, live animal exports, in East London that's gone up. Mm-hmm. But these people seem to be ignoring it there because obviously it's a little
touchy subject.
But it's still, it makes them think.
It's awareness is what it's all about. Yes. And if you didn't get all that, we're at WODAC this weekend. It's Friday, Saturday and Sunday, the Canine Zone magazine stand. We're also going to be handing out Ban Animal Trading flyers, which will tell you what they do. They do amazing work. So please pop by our stand and come and pick up one of those flyers. And Smaragda, thank you for all you do. I mean, I don't know how you do it. We were chatting out the studio and saying sometimes this whole animal rescue, it brings out such anger in you that you have to live with every day and overcome it and realize that it's not about you, it's about the animals.
Exactly, you have to. Thank you so much, Sharon, because being on a show like yours helps us to create awareness, and we really appreciate this. Thank you.
No, for sure. Smaragda, thank you so very much again. Bless you for all you do. Right, now we're going to be back, Jonna. Our next guest is going to talk to us about grieving when your beloved pet has passed.
Yes, we're talking to Mary Beth Haynes, the author of The Power of Pets. And we have booked this interview. Me and Sharon have been looking forward to this for weeks now.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, we have her on the line. So we'll just play a little sting and we'll be right back. Okay, and we're back on Animal Central. Now, something that myself and Sharon have been looking forward to for weeks is chatting to Mary Beth Haynes, who joins us now on Skype from Canada. Mary Beth, are you there?
I am. Hello, Jonathan. Hello, Sharon. Hello from
Canada. Hi, Mary Beth. Yeah, thank you so much. It's so
Okay, welcome to Animal Central. Thank you so much. I know it's very early for you there in Canada. What time is it now?
We are looking at 5:40 a.m., but that's great. I've been up for a while. I've been listening to your program.
Oh, good, good, good.
Everything is wonderful.
And how's the summer in Canada?
It is, and we finally got summer. We've had a very, very long winter here, and it actually took till about 3 weeks ago for summer to actually arrive. So summer's been late this year, but we're here.
As long as it shows up eventually.
Now, Mary Beth, I was so excited to get you on the show today because, you know, I publish Canine Zone magazine, and we've got a Facebook page, and not a day goes by when one of our, I call them our Canine Zoners, one of their beloved pets don't pass away, or as we sometimes say, cross the rainbow bridge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know what to say to these people because it does cause so much pain. This is a family member, a child. Mm-hmm. And Mary Beth, that is what your book is all about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The connection that we have with animals and our pets is, I think that for a lot of people, you would agree with me that it's a way that can't really be explained in the way that they touch our lives and the gifts that we share.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Mary Beth, something that really stuck out in the book for me is where you explain that their lives are physiologically going to be shorter than us. When you buy a pet, you have to realize that you more than likely are going to outlive your pet, which is a tough thing to deal with.
It's the only fault.
And a good quote is says, love them like people, but respect them for the physiology that they have. So we have to remember that their time on Earth is shorter, which I think is hard for us to deal with as humans.
It is, you know, that quote came from with the book that when I wrote it, I actually did a lot of interviews with experts and different people in the pet industry, and that quote specifically came from Jessica Danilin with Royal Canin. She said it best, and I really wanted to include it in the book because she's right. We love pets. We want them in our lives forever. They don't have the lifespan that we as humans do. And I think that it's really making the best that we can out of the time that we have together. And when we look back at what it is that we did and what happened that made us smile and what connections did we share together, that's what we can carry with us. Because when the time comes for them to pass away, and it's something that, you know, still to this day with the animals that I've had in my life, loss never goes away. Right. But there are things that you can do to help yourself in healing so that it becomes not necessarily better, but perhaps easier to handle.
Marybeth, in the book, it's a very easy read, and it's actually a very short book. It doesn't drag on. It gets straight to the point, and it deals with these issues. But in the book, The Power of Pets, you give us 7 effective tools to heal from the loss of a pet. Would you just like to run through those and explain them a bit more?
Absolutely, yes. And the book is short for a reason. It's a book, it's practical, it's a healing book. A lot of times we'll have a book that's very, very thick and we intend on reading it, but it stays on our bookshelf.
Yeah.
This
yes.
book we...
For as long
so
as you have pets, you'll need
purposely.
It.
Yes, exactly. So the 7 effective tools, the way that I bring the reader in, the way that I bring you in is, you know, if you were to envision a pathway, and on this pathway, the pathway is made of cobblestone, and you hear the birds singing, and there's greenery around you, and you're walking along the pathway to be able to get to these 7 effective tools. But you find that when you get on this pathway a little bit further, that you find that the path actually forks. But instead of choosing, do I go left? Do I go right? You realize that it actually forks in 7 different directions, and these 7 directions are symbolic of these 7 effective tools. And at that point, you may feel that you're at a crossroads, and that can happen when we're experiencing the loss of a pet, because there's so many emotions that are happening. Which road do I take? Where do I go? Do I turn back and do nothing? And I invite you in the book to take the journey with me, and let's start with path number 1, tool number 1, because you'll see that there's a signpost on that path that says all paths lead to healing. So no matter where you go, if you are looking at healing, you'll get there. So the 7 effective tools, the number 1 is recognition, recognizing that healing needs to take place. It's a very, very simple tool, but one that we often forget and can make, we as humans tend to make things a little difficult sometimes. So when grieving loss, recognition is the very first step. You know what? This is happening, and I recognize that I need to heal.
Yes.
Exactly. And so the second step is taking that a little bit further. So, you know, giving yourself permission. We live in a fast-paced society. We live in a society where there are societal stigmas, where some people understand and some people think you should be over it by now. It's just a dog.
Right. Yeah.
And it's saying, you know what, I give myself permission to give myself the time and the energy and whatever is necessary for me to be able to heal. Because when I give myself that permission, I can allow this to happen regardless of what society is perhaps might be imposing on me at this time.
Yes.
And then moving forward to the third tool is about learning. A lot of times we have emotions and feelings and things that are happening that we don't fully understand. And so in this tool, I share, you know, what are the stages of grief? What are things that are going to be happening? There's also tools of, for coping and the sudden loss of a pet. And in this area too, there's always guilt.
Yes.
Regardless of what happened,
did
guilt
you
is there.
Enough?
Exactly.
Yes.
So some ways to be able to support that.
The next step really hit home with me, and that was personal empowerment. And just 2 points that stood out there was the law of polarity and the law of germination for me. Would you care to just explain how that relates to this topic?
Absolutely. So personal empowerment is, you know, healing from within, bringing that personal component in that can empower you forward. And my mentor actually shared these 2 laws with me, and I just thought they just resonated with me so strongly when it comes to healing from loss of our loving pets. And the first one's law of polarity. And what it states is that there's 2 sides to everything, with the exception of gravity. Gravity only goes down. Mm-hmm. Gravity never goes up.
Mm.
But with everything else, there's 2 sides. So if there is a circumstance in life, there's always an opposite, and every situation can be seen in 2 ways. So if something is very bad, it can be also very good.
Yes.
And so if we were to look at how, if I were to kind of explain that in my words and how I explain it in the book, is that losing your pet can be devastating, and the feelings and the emotions of working through each stage of healing and grief can really be challenging. And so when we look at the law of polarity and we look at how that can help us in the area of personal empowerment in healing, we can be reminded that when there's sadness, there can be happiness.
Yes.
And when there's depression, there can be vitality. And when there's loneliness, there can be connection. And it's when we grasp that fact and when we understand that that light of the tunnel it can become a bit more visible then, a bit more brighter, and a bit more within arm's reach. And
right.
That is empowering.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, let us move on to step number five, receiving guidance.
Receiving guidance is a great tool in the fact of, you know what, this is great, I've given myself permission and I understand what's happening, but what do I do? Mm-hmm. What are some things that I can actually do? And so this tool actually provides practical things, whether perhaps you might want to connect yourself with people that really support you. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the Power of Pets movement on Facebook. We have a global community of pet lovers all around the world who come together to celebrate our pets. And when our pets have passed, we stand beside each other and unite together unconditionally, knowing that it is a safe space for healing. So there's a lot of great resources out there. And it's really important to connect to that. And there are some other things that you can do, you know, such as journaling or creating a book of memories or giving back. You know, what would your pet, if your pet could speak, what would he or she say to you? You know, what did they love to do? Did they, you know, did he love to go walk along the beach? And if he did, maybe you could bring some tennis balls and give them out to the other dogs along the beach in honor of your pet.
Right.
You know, making a tribute and an honor to him or her to celebrate them and the many gifts that they share.
Yes.
Well, a good point, Nancy Graham, I think, in the book, she said how she copes is she says, what did your pet teach you? Mm-hmm. So the example in the book is if your pet was patient, honor your pets by being more patient in your daily life.
Yes.
If your pet was always about fun, love, and loving everyone, honor your pet by being more like that and learn something from your pets, which really stuck with me. Let's go on to the next step, which I think is hard for all of us, is taking action.
Yes, absolutely. You know, taking action, as you said, it's a very hard step. It is the most important tool in this book. All the tools are important, but if you do them all, however, you don't do the action step, then it won't happen. Healing will not move forward. There has to be that step of action. And the way that I share with you in the book about that is that it's more like being connected to taking responsibility and being proactive in your own healing. And when you actually, you know, become empowered, and that's why I put taking action in this tool number six, because if I said it at the beginning, you know, we need to build up to that. We need to become comfortable. And when you get to that part of taking action, it's a significant step, and you will find that even if it's a baby step, it doesn't mean you have to go leaps and bounds. It's just taking responsibility and saying, you know what, I don't know how I'm going to do this because I'm having a really hard time here, but I'm open to at least taking a step, and that will bring you forward.
I think a lot of time pet owners deal with a lot of guilt when their pets maybe get sick. And I know something which I've dealt with in my own life is a pet running away. And you feel responsible. You feel if only I'd been home at that time, if I hadn't done this, if I hadn't done this, I would still have my pet with me. And I think it's very different when your pet passes away, you know it's final. You know where your pet is in a way. But when an animal runs away, you don't know. Mm. Are they alive? Are they dead? Are they eating? Mm-hmm. Are they drinking?
Yes.
What advice would you have for that, Mary Beth?
You know, it's interesting. My I'm actually writing a book on being able to support a missing pet, and I'm really glad that you brought that up because right now guilt is going to be a huge part of that. And what I like to do is I like to remind people to go back to what your intention is and what your intention always was. So, for example, if you opened the door and the pet ran away and you don't know where that pet is, there are first of all active things that you can do to physically look for your pet. There are message boards, there are ways, you know, humane societies, get that system of support in there to search for your pet. If you find though that your pet is just not returning and you're really not sure where or what's happening, go back to intention. What was your intention at that time that your pet went missing? And I think you'll answer that your intention was always of love and care for your pet. You never, ever did anything on purpose.
Right, absolutely.
And when, now it doesn't take it away and it doesn't make it better, but it can empower you forward in the next steps that you can take to be able to kind of take this journey forward and heal from that. Yes, my book that's coming out is actually going to give some great tools and some great ways and strategies and step-by-step things that you can do, but guilt is an absolutely huge part of it. But always go back to that intention and always go back to the love that you have for your pet and where you were at that time.
Now, a good friend of mine actually lost her old Rottweiler this week. Mishka passed away. And she said to me, she doesn't know what to do. She's feeling the grief. She's feeling the loss so much. And I said to her, maybe one of the things would be to honor Mishka by going to a humane society, to a shelter, and a fostering or adopting another dog. Do you think that is a good idea, Mary Beth? Or should you give yourself time first to grieve, you know, the doggy that's passed away before you get a new dog?
I think that always giving back to another animal in memory of your pet can be a great way to heal. Not only are you helping yourself, you're helping another animal in need. Now, in saying that, I think that it's really important because we are all unique, and what might be best for me might not be best for you.
Yes.
And sometimes when people lose a pet and then they immediately go out and get another pet or they foster another pet, they end up replacing what their pet what that pet held for them.
Yes.
And they're not giving themselves the opportunity to heal because a new pet has replaced that old pet. And if that's the case, then and again, it's always individual basis, but if that's the case, it might be good to give yourself time for healing. For other people, however, they are okay. They know that this new pet that's coming into their lives is different. They're not comparing it to their pet that is passed, and they're still honoring that space for healing. And if that's the case, then getting a new pet can be a wonderful way to heal.
See, that's always worked for me when my doggies have passed on. I've always felt to bring a new dog in brings new life, and you're honoring that pet. But as you say, it's up to the individual.
I think it's important that there's no judgment. I mean, if that's your healing process, then go for it. If you feel you're ready for a new pet and to give love to that pet unconditionally, then I think it's great to go for it. If you feel you need a couple of years just to grieve that loss and go through those emotions, then I think that's the way to go. But Mary Beth, just before we run out of time, we have one more tool left, and that is Gifts of Many.
This is my absolute favorite tool. And what this gift is all about is realizing the gifts that we have during our time together with our pets. And something that's very empowering about that is when we are focusing on the loss of our pet is no longer here and we're missing them dearly. Let's go back to when we were together. Let's remember the things they did to make us smile. Let's remember when we would walk in the door after a really hard day, they were there for us. And when we remember these things and identify them positively as gifts, we can take them and move them with us forward in healing. It's almost like we've been building a toolkit, you know, through all of these tools, and we've been adding in these different tools. And this last tool is anytime you need to reconnect with your pet, you can, and you can through those gifts that are in that specially reserved place in your heart. Even though our pets are no longer here, it's the connection that still remains. Our time together is now part of recorded history, and that's something that never, ever can be taken away.
Never,
let's embrace that.
Never, ever. That's absolutely beautiful, Mary
Beth. Mary Beth, your book has really it brought home that this is a normal thing to feel, and I think sometimes as humans we tend to lie to ourselves and say, it was just a dog.
Yes.
Why am I feeling like this? I didn't lose one of my children, but you actually did.
Well, it's a family member.
Allow yourself to feel those feelings. Mary Beth, I know that you're giving away free copies of your book for a certain period of time on your website. Won't you just tell us more about that?
Absolutely. So right now, if anybody would like a free downloadable copy of the book, they can go to powerofpets365.com, and then there's a blue box right on the page. And what we'll do is I'll send one to you immediately after that, and I also can keep in touch with you and see how you're doing if you'd like as well. My publisher has agreed to do this, and we've been doing it for a little while, and we're going to be doing it for a little bit longer, and I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to share this with everybody here today, and they're welcome to a copy. It would be an honor to share one with them.
Wonderful. That is going to help so many people.
Yeah.
Mary Beth, I mean, I'm also, if you don't mind, I'll put it on our Facebook wall as well, because I'm sure, you know, people, as Jonathan was saying, they don't get the same support. If you go into the office or whatever and you say your mother has passed, people do give you a lot more support and compassion than if you come in and say your hamster has passed, your dog
imagine
has passed.
Imagine trying to take compassionate leave for your dog. I mean, people will laugh at you.
No, they would.
But Mary Beth, we literally have a few seconds left. I just want to say thank you for joining us and for waking up so early to chat to us. And I'm sure we will be in touch soon.
Thank you so much, Mary Beth.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well,
okay.
That's the show.
Sharon,
jam-packed.
Just before we run out of time, WODAC this weekend.
WODAC this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Please come say hi. We in stand 2 and 3. And Jono is taking part on Sunday morning in the Celebrity Dog Challenge.
Correct.
Jono, Cosper de Fris,
and
Damon
Calvari.
So come and see these guys run around the track, or field, whatever you call it, with their agility dogs. All the proceeds are going back to shelters. It's going to be so much fun. So please come say hi.
And we're back next week.
We'll be back next week with more news. And as usual, give all your pets big hugs from us. Bye.
CliffCentral.com.